one race that has been decided is that of state school superintendent. Mark Johnson, a former Teach for America teacher at West Charlotte High and now a school board member in Winston-Salem, unseated longtime education chief June Atkinson in the recent election. Meanwhile, CMS has begun their search for a new local superintendent. What could new leadership at both levels mean for education here and around the state? To peer into their crystal balls about that and other education topics, we've invited Lisa Wharf and Ann Doss Helms to be with us for the rest of the hour. Lisa is assistant news director and education reporter for WFAE News, and Ann is the longtime education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back.
Thanks.
3 weeks ago, Mark Johnson defeated incumbent Democrat June Atkinson in the race for superintendent of public education. Atkinson had held that post for three terms and was running for her fourth. She kind of had to be twisted into doing that, but she ran. What did Johnson run on that won him this election?
Partly on wanting a new face, tired of things as they are, which of course is a big theme through all of the elections, and we've got that now. We've got somebody who had a very long career in the Department of Public Instruction replaced by someone who is not as well known to most people. One of his big themes was to reform and reduce testing, which I think is a fairly popular theme. There's a sense that we've gone overboard with testing and with the accountability and ratings that follow from that. Anything that he does has to be done in conjunction with the legislature, but we will now have a Republican state superintendent working with a Republican legislature, so we'll see how that plays out.
And there was surely some tension there before, having a Democratic superintendent and a Republican legislature. They often didn't see eye to eye.
But she says some Republicans asked her to run again. Do you think they asked her to run again so she would lose?
I think she has some respect, surely, from Republicans, and I think the State Board of Education, several members who are Republicans, give her respect. But, for example, with charter schools, the legislature yanked them out of her control and made them report directly to the State Board of Education. So it'll be interesting to see how this relationship.
He says his teaching experience, I think he taught for 2 years.
Yes.
At West Charlotte, it gave him, convinced him that more of the same would not improve public education in the state. So he's likely to make changes, and he's likely to make them quickly and with the help of the legislature, do you think, in 30 seconds or less?
I think he has very little power to make sweeping educational changes. And I've said before, dramatic change is something that we all love in theory, and once it gets down to the nitty-gritty of actually changing schools and jobs and things like that, it's very hard to make fast change.
A lot more to talk about with regard to Mark Johnson as the new state superintendent. We'll also talk about the CMS superintendent search and, as time allows, Project Lift, which had a report card released this week, and possibly magnet schools, if the clock allows us to do that. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about education now with Lisa Wharf from WFAE News and Ann Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer. During the race that she lost, June Atkinson, the former the current superintendent of education at the state level, pointed to rising high school graduation rates from 68.3% of students to an all-time high of 85.8% over the past decade. And she cited other improvements as well, as she pointed to the need for those high school graduates to take, graduates to take remedial classes when they got to community colleges. So did that convince voters that what we're witnessing here is a lowering of standards or just turning people out the door so we can raise the graduation rates without really raising the educational levels? Is that what they saw?
I don't think that voters on these races did a detailed analysis of education policy. I think,
Is that what might have happened? If we're raising graduation rates and they still need remedial education, are we graduating qualified students?
I think there is widespread bipartisan agreement that that's the next challenge, that yes, it's better to have graduates than to have dropouts, but graduates that we are producing do not always have the skills they need.
And if that's the case, you have a worthless degree. And why wouldn't educators see that on the face of it for what it is?
I mean, I think test scores have been going up some over that time, and it's very hard to figure out because the tests change, the grading scales change too. But I think you can't simply say there hasn't been any improvement and the graduation rate has increased. I mean, sure, it has been easier to graduate. They've decreased the credits, but
so did Mark Johnson propose any ways to change this, to improve it, to solidify it?
I am not aware of any detailed proposals like that, but I did not follow that campaign very closely.
And he said, because he taught 2 years at West Charlotte as a Teach for America teacher, he was convinced that the problems we face today need hands-on solutions. Do you know what that means?
I get the sense from him that one of his ideas is that he wants the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction to support more of these local ideas from districts. He doesn't think there's maybe enough leeway for districts to do that. So perhaps that's, you know, part of what he's getting at with hands-on solutions.
The state is in the middle of finalizing a plan on how it will measure student knowledge and school quality. And I think they send that then to Washington. I don't know whether Washington has to approve or just file it away in a file cabinet someplace. But Johnson will take office before that final version goes to Washington. Will he have a chance to have input?
Are we talking about the compliance with the ESSA?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Boy, things just move so slowly when it comes to state reviews and federal reviews that my sense would be that, again, it's sort of like that ocean liner has been going for a while, and he probably won't be able to veer it off course much one way or the other, but he will get a chance to weigh in.
Johnson is 33 years old. June Atkinson, the outgoing state superintendent of education, has been in that job for 11 years and has been with the state Department of Education for 40 years, for longer than he's been alive. And she has said that she has no animosity about the outcome, and she promises a smooth transition. But she also says this, and I quote, "It's really hard for me to figure out what I want to say to him because I don't know where to start. I mean, he's taught 2 years. He's never run an organization that has almost 900 people. He has never traveled to the 100 counties. He doesn't have a background. So it's like, how do I teach or how do I help a person who is an infant in public education to become an adult overnight to be able to help public education in this state?" I mean, she has a point, but that's how elections work in this country.
It is. We have a president of the United States who's never held public office before. So
should we worry about this, or should we see this as an opportunity to bring fresh eyes to these problems?
Well, what I'm curious too is how many people he'll keep that are currently in top level positions in the Department of Public Instruction, who may be, you know, guiding him through the process. But we'll see.
And he says not to discount his experience as a teacher, a school board member. He's a member of the school board, I think, in what?
Winston-Salem.
And he's also an attorney. Will he be overwhelmed by running a 900-person department and doing all the other things that a state superintendent has to do?
Well, as Lisa noted, he won't be doing it by himself.
Right.
The key is always surrounding yourself with good people who can handle the details. And he does have, I think, some relevant experience from classroom teaching to being on a local school board. Those are constituencies that he has to understand and deal with. So we'll see if he does a good job with it.
CMS has launched their search for a successor to Ann Clark, who took over when Heath Morrison left under a cloud of, or a lack of transparency, shall we say. We don't know why he left, and we never will. The school board said they intended to bring finalists in for interviews in a veiled way because prospective candidates didn't want their current employers to know they were in the running for the job. That process has begun, correct?
The semifinalists have come and gone. They came in, and it was always going to be that was going to be confidential. The question mark, and I actually think it's not a very big question mark anymore, is whether next week when they are scheduled to interview finalists, and at that point we're talking two or three people, whether those people will go before the public as they have in many, many recent searches.
Yeah.
I think the answer is no. I think once you say that's optional, you know, nobody wants to come throw yourself into parading before a community, being extremely exposed, and there's a 50% chance or greater that you'll be sent home as the loser. So they have said that if the strongest candidates don't want to do this, they're not going to do it. I think it's unlikely, but we'll find out soon.
Is that how it's done in other districts around the country now, that this is not known who the finalists are anywhere in the country for these jobs? So these public positions that the taxpayers fund, that's the way it's being done?
I think many districts,
so,
yeah.
Or they may, before they actually sign a contract, they may say, well, we've decided we want to hire Joe Blow, and we're going to bring him to meet you all, but as opposed to saying, we've got narrowed down to these three, and they're all going to make the rounds, which they've done in the past.
And that's what their superintendent search firm is basically advising them to do, who does a lot of these searches, is say, you know, you'll get better candidates if they don't have to worry about being outed.
And it's interesting because that firm made a big point of transparency in the public business should be done in public. But they're also saying if you have, you know, if this public process means you have to settle for your second tier of candidates, maybe we give up some of that.
Well, on the one hand, transparency is a good thing. But transparency in this case, would it be a good thing? Because the average person, me, I wouldn't know whether the finalists are qualified for the job. I wouldn't have the time or the inclination to do the research into it.
And that's one of the thoughts that's out there is we did this and we got, with Heath Morrison and with Peter Gorman, we got people who are very charismatic, who are very good communicators. That's what shows up. Do you have that public energy? Can you inspire a crowd? And that is part of the job. That is an important part of the job, but it's not all of the job. And with both of those people, as time went on, it appeared that there were some things that did not show up. You know,
So the starshine eclipsed some of the negatives that perhaps they had that the other candidates didn't have, but they came across better because they had charisma.
Well, and the charisma factor has come up a lot in their discussions, at least, you know, several months ago when they were trying to still get their head around this process. And they had, you know, people warning them, hey, you have to keep in mind other things, you know, the sort of star power. And I think they probably didn't need to be reminded of that, but that is something that they have in their heads.
The Observer editorialized that board members seem to be saying, trust us. Frankly, we don't. Those are the words of the paper. And further, given the general distrust of government out there in the land that we just finished talking about and the lack of transparency over the departure of the previous superintendent, Heath Morrison, isn't transparency here, right now, more important than ever?
Well, I think it is, and I think that is an issue in general. I think if you feel like you've bought into that new superintendent, there's a little more of a honeymoon period, a little more of a feeling that I and my neighborhood and my group wants this person to succeed because we were for him or her. Mm-hmm. There is also this board has not been great with transparency. The whole Heath Morrison thing where they decided they were going to just tell everybody he was going home to take care of his mother because that was better for the district. And even when it became clear because of reporters getting at the actual facts of it, they still said, we're not going to address this publicly. We think it's better for you not to know. That's a reasonable question.
Well, reporters know, because it was in the paper, that the school board was bringing in these finalist candidates in a side door at the government center. So if you know they're coming in a side door, why don't you know who they are?
Well, you know, in the past, I have, and Dedrick Russell, we kind of laugh about it. We have been at the airport, you know, got tickets to try to sneak in and hope that you see someone and recognize them. And, of course, who we saw the last time around was Ann Clark, whom we recognized. And Dedrick had actually gotten a glimpse, as it turned out, of Heath Morrison, of course. And he was foolish enough to have a bag that had some, you know, Superintendent's Academy label on it, which is how he picked up on that. But he did not have a name tag that said, hi, I'm Heath Morrison, and I'm applying for superintendent. So
when might they make this announcement? Because they want this person in place before Ann Clark's contract expires in June of 2017. When might we have an inkling of who this person is going to be?
Could be December. I think probably early January is when we might expect an announcement. But that's still to be seen. We're kind of in the eye of the hurricane right now, it feels like. There's so much that's going to happen after the first of the year. We get a new U.S. education secretary, a new state superintendent, a new CMS superintendent. The magnet changes start to play out in real life. We will probably start to see some proposals on neighborhood school boundaries, which will be a huge thing. And, oh, by the way, it'll be a school board election year and a CMS bond campaign year, so it's kind of quiet right now. It will not be that way for long.
I don't know if I'd want to be a new superintendent to come in and take a job when the board's going to change out from under me in the first 6 months of my tenure.
It's the definition of the job.
Wow. A report card of the efforts of Project Lift's success at helping high-poverty schools to succeed was released in the last couple of weeks. Before we talk about the results, give me a thumbnail of Project Lift. What is it?
It's basically a private public partnership between CMS and philanthropists that have given about $50 million to these nine schools or eight schools that
this
all
This is just
feed,
in Charlotte.
It is just in Charlotte. They all feed into West Charlotte High School with the idea that they're going to improve graduation rates, they're going to improve scores. That all these resources, they're going to try new things to see, you know, what works and what doesn't, and hopefully that can spread throughout the district.
How did all this $50 million is a lot of money. How did all this come together? Who spearheaded this? What entity spearheaded this?
The Foundation for the Carolinas, I believe, okay. And some of the major donors who started saying, you know, this was at the time kind of came out of that era when people were saying, you know, Charlotte-Mecklenburg's urban schools are a disaster. You had a judge saying, you know, I'm going to close some of these high schools because you're committing academic genocide. You've got huge numbers of poor and black and Hispanic kids who are not succeeding and not graduating. You need to do something about it. So the people who have some money said, let's see what we can do. And there was a lot of excitement about, you know, real commitment, not just give a few books.
So the report card is out. The results were mixed after 4 years and $33 million spent so far in private money. What do we know?
We know that graduation rates are impressive. I think it was 86% at West Charlotte High, which
are they qualified graduates? Do we know?
Well, that based on the ACT scores, not so much. They are very proud of the fact that one-third of their graduates last year went into college or the military. Mm-hmm. I can't help thinking that means two-thirds didn't. And if those two-thirds went into jobs or other alternatives that were constructive, that's great. I don't think it's where anybody really wanted to be now. I think there was a great deal of hope that the test scores would be much more impressive, that it would be, you know, the talk originally was about these schools being comparable to the best that Charlotte-Mecklenburg has to offer. And now the comparisons that they're doing, and I do give them a lot of credit for doing and reporting these real studies, but they're showing that on the test scores, the Project Lift kids are pretty much comparable to the most disadvantaged kids in CMS that they've been matched
really, because I read yesterday that nearly all schools met or exceeded state growth expectations, that middle schoolers in Project Lift schools outperformed non-Lift peers.
They did, and that was the one. Again, there were a lot of measures. There were, you know, elementary, middle, high, different test scores. So that was the middle school one was the one that popped out. Although, again, if you look at the charts, we're still talking about proficiency rates under 40% for both groups. So again, that's not, you know, had they gone in saying, you know, we might get close to 50%, I don't think anybody would have been excited.
So this
about
was
that.
Another attempt to raise the test scores and raise the educational performance in high poverty schools, and it's one that's having some success. How many other programs like this have there been, and we still haven't found what it is to make it really successful?
I mean, we've never had a program quite like Project Lift that concentrates all this money mm-hmm. on this particular set of schools. I mean, one of the difficulties that they've faced, too, is that over 3 years, you know, there's a churn of half of the kids coming through there no longer go to those schools, not because they graduated from them, but they're moving to other schools. So that's
within the system?
Within the system, they could be moving to charter schools. They could be moving to private schools too. So, you know,
so it's hard to keep score of it because the players keep changing.
It is hard to keep score. Now this year though, that they tracked everything from students who have stayed in those schools. Yeah, I mean, it certainly had its challenges.
And this was actually sort of half a report card. It was some of the analysis, but not all of it. One of the pieces that I'm really interested in is still to come in January is looking at the four schools where they use some of that private money to do year-round calendars and in some cases to pay the teachers to teach extra days. That seems so intuitively like something that would work. You know, I really thought, okay, boom, the mm-hmm. first year we see a difference and we keep seeing bigger gains and in the previous 2 years, we have not seen gains. And what they say is, well, we picked the most challenged schools, but it will be interesting to see if we have any measurable results.
Well, there's still $12 million to be spent on this program going of the original $50 million. Will they
It turned out to be a little less than 50.
All right. We have to go. We have to end this now, I'm sorry to say. Ann Dawes Helms, education reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Lisa Wharf with WFAE News. Thank you very much, both of you.